We're going to be looking at a text from Romans chapter 10 this morning. And this is a really neat passage of scripture where Paul is talking about, specifically he's talking about the Jewish people and his love for them and kind of how things are for them. But I think there's a lot of things in this text that kind of apply to us and our modern culture. In our country, and so I want to look at this text this morning and talk about it. In verse one of chapter 10, like I said, Paul has just been talking all of chapter 9 about Israel and trying to reach the Jewish people, and he says, "Brethren, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for them is for their salvation." Now, but before I get any further in the text, I want to ask you a question. Because how many of you are relatively familiar with how the Jews have treated Paul in the last 15, 20 years when he writes this? Are most of you aware of how he's been treated by the Jews? Since he has abandoned his role as a Pharisee and accepted Christ and become a missionary, first to his own people and then later to the Gentiles, Paul has been imprisoned multiple times. He's been stoned a couple of times. He has been beaten. He's been flogged. Everything you can imagine. They have tried multiple times to kill him. Now, let me ask you a question. How many times would somebody have to try to kill you before you would start earnestly desiring their salvation? Now, that sounds like a funny question when you ask it, because you're like, well, that's kind of a stupid question. We stop worrying about somebody's salvation if they cut us off in traffic. All somebody's got to do is, just take a minute and think about church dynamics. How little does it take for there to be conflict among church people? Now, think about this. The Apostle Paul has been mistreated by his own people for 20 years. They have tried to kill him, they've arrested him, they've beaten him, they've stoned him, they have made his life miserable. And in his letter to the Roman church, he says, "My heart's desire and my prayer to God is for their salvation." Now, this is to me, and a lot of times if you're studying this text, you would kind of skip over verse 1 because really a lot of people consider the meat of the text verses 2 through 4. But verse 1, I think, has a real significance to the modern church and to us as Christians, because when we start thinking about passionately caring about salvation, who are they most concerned with their salvation? Themselves. The object for, and I've heard Christians say this 100 times, "Hey, I'm saved." You ever heard anybody say that? And they say it as if my work is done. I'm saved. I'm going to go to heaven. I'm a Christian. Ta-da! You know, and it's like, well, there you go. I've done everything I'm supposed to do. I'm getting in. But is that really how it's supposed to work? So I want you to, just take a minute and just where you're sitting, just think about this question. Who is your heart's desire to come to salvation? Who is somebody in your life that you're like, my heart's desire is for them to come to salvation? Now you start thinking about that question. And then here's the next question. What have you done about it? Now, some of you may be like, dude, I've done everything I can. And if you have, look, I understand, because Paul has. Paul's done everything he can for the Jewish people. But the reality is, a lot of times, we'll go, oh, well, there is this person, man, I'd really love for them to be saved. And you're like, okay, how many times have you invited them to church? How many times have you witnessed to them? How many times have you sat down and had a heart-to-heart conversation about what Christ has done in your life? And you realize, never. And so if you've never done that, is it really fair to say it's your heart's desire for them to come to salvation? Right? I mean, does that make sense? It's like, well, I want nothing more in the world for this person to know Jesus. Well, have you told them about Jesus? No, of course not. That doesn't make any sense at all, does it? And so Paul here, as he is talking to the Roman church, which, by the way, has a fair number of Jews and a fair number of Gentiles, and he says, look, this is my heart's desire, my prayer. These are my people. And despite everything they've done to me, despite all the abuse they've heaped on me, my heart's desire is to see them saved. Now, we live in an incredibly divided country. I'm not sure everybody in this room feels that way about people who are politically aligned opposite of them. Do we really want our political enemies to be saved? How many of you, now, as you're thinking that question, how many of you ever said, they're going to get what they deserve? They're going to get what they deserve. I hope you get what you deserve. You're going to burn, buddy. And I'm going to celebrate while it happens. Any of you ever thought that? And you're thinking, I've never thought that about political enemies, but I have thought that about people from other countries or other faiths. Maybe you've thought that about Muslims before. Or maybe you've thought that about Hindus. Or maybe you've thought that about, we're going to go old school here, the commies. Some of you are going, oh, Cold War reference, nice. The Russians, they're gonna get what's coming to them one of these days. We probably have all done that more than we like to admit. And the irony is, none of those people groups have done to us probably what the Jews had done to Paul. And so Paul says, look, this is, I'm gonna be trying to reach my people. I'm gonna be trying to save them. My heart's desire, my prayer to God is for their salvation. Now let's get into verse 2 now, because we could spend more time on 1, but I don't want to, because I got to go home and rest before I go to camp. All right. So verse 2, he says, "For I testify about them that they have a zeal for God." Now listen to this, but not in accordance with knowledge. How many of you know somebody who says they love God and you can't tell by the way they live? Probably every one of us in this room knows somebody like that. Probably every one of us does. We know somebody. Some of you may go, you may know church people like that. But we all know somebody. And here's, by the way, here's one of my favorites. See if you've ever heard this one. Some of you may have said it before, but see if you've ever heard this one. I love God. Me and God have a thing, but I'm not into religion. Any of you ever heard that one? That's a golden oldie, right? I love God, but I don't like religion. I love God, but I don't need church. I love God, but I don't have to live by his rules. And that sounds like what Paul's talking about here. He says, I testify about them. They have a zeal for God, a passion for God, but not based on any knowledge of God. How many of you have ever had this thing for somebody who was famous, and then you met them and you were incredibly disappointed? Has that ever happened to any of you? Have you ever met somebody and you're like, that person is not nearly as nice as I thought? I got a chance in college to work at a Christian concert. I'm not going to say who it was, because this is streaming online and he might be listening, because I'm sure he's a big fan of mine. But I went to this concert, and the one of the guys at Johnson who was a student there, he was like in his seventh year, but he had some connection. He says, look, I'm involved with this promotion, this concert. We need some people to sell T-shirts. And so if you go to the concert and you sell T-shirts, when the concert's over, you can go backstage and meet this guy. And we were like, yeah, that'd be awesome. It wasn't awesome. It was so disappointing. It was so disappointing because this guy, and I get it. He's been up singing. He's tired. He's got a big check to cash. That's going to take a lot of effort. I mean, he's exhausted. So we go backstage and he's like, hey, these are some of my friends from the Bible college. They came and worked the concert. They wanted to meet you. He's like, I ain't interested. Now, it's good for him that 55-year-old Stuart wasn't there. 21-year-old Stuart was like, oh, well. 55-year-old Stuart might have said something to him. In fact, some of you are going, might have? 55-year-old Stuart might have choked him. I'm not going to lie to you. I was like, that is not, dude, that's not cool. But I was incredibly disappointed. And to this day, it's like anytime I hear one of his songs, I'm just like, yeah, I met that guy once. I'm not impressed. Not very Christ-like. And I'm sure that's happened to some others of you, or you've met people and been like, oh, this is just very disappointing. And the problem is you're fans of them, but you don't have any real knowledge of them, right? It's like you don't really know them. You don't really know them. So you're like, oh, I like them from afar. I love their work. Oh, their movies are great. But if you ever meet them and you're like, oh, that person's not what I thought they were, that's very disappointing. Paul says you've got these Jewish people who have a zeal for God, a passion for God, but they don't have any knowledge. How many of you know people who love to do stuff they're not good at? Some of you are going, I'm watching one right now. By the way, thanks for just thinking it, not say it out loud. Appreciate that. I've got a friend, I'm not, loves to cook. Not a good idea. Any of you ever known somebody that loved to cook that wasn't very good at it? And then they're always going, hey, try this. And you're like, no. No, I don't want to try that. No, I did it off a recipe. No, dude, you can't read. I've tried your recipes. That's ever happened to you? Or somebody, you ever had that friend that says, hey, man, look, you having trouble with your car? I'll fix it for you. I love working on cars. You ever had somebody that worked on your car and it was worse when they finished than when you let them get under the hood? It's one thing to love doing something. It's another thing to be good at doing something. And it all comes down to knowledge. You can have a passion for something and not be very good at it. And that's what Paul's talking about here. He says, let me tell you about my people. They got a zeal for God. They got a passion for God. Yeah, they don't know much about God. They just don't know much about him. And so, you know, as we sit here today and you read that, you know, a really fascinating question is, how well do you know God? Some of you go, well, I'm a big fan of God. Love the whole creation thing he did. I love that. Some of his work is really impressive. I've read Song of Solomon. That's good work, you know. I'm really impressed with forgiveness, and I like some of that stuff. I'm really impressed with some of the things he's done. But do you know him? How much time do you spend talking to him? How much time do you spend in his word? How much time do you spend communicating with him? And a lot of people are like, well, not that much. We're fans of his work, but our knowledge is not probably where it should be. All right, let's go to verse 3. So he says, for not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. Now, if that does not sound like this generation, I don't know what does. I was listening to a lecture on YouTube the other day. And there was actually a debate between these two people. And it was an atheist, and I'll say in a vague sense, a believer. I won't say a Christian because I don't know that this person's a Christian, but he definitely believes in God. And so they were debating the existence of God. And one of the things the guy was talking about, the believer, he said, you cannot have morality without God. Which is an interesting point. And the atheist said, sure you can. Man is totally capable of developing a morality absent of God. So here's the question. Absent of God, who defines morality? You do. Right? You do. You decide what's moral, right? So let's go back in the last 100 years and let's identify some of the morality that man came up with on their own. Let's start with Hitler. Let's start with Hitler. We're going to exterminate all the people that we don't like. And by the way, it wasn't just the Jews. The Jews were the largest crowd, but it was handicapped people. How many of you knew that Hitler exterminated physically and mentally handicapped people in Germany? How many of you knew he did that? A few of you. He exterminated the gypsies, a subclass of people that lived in Germany that were from the Romanian area and all throughout that part of Europe. He didn't like the gypsies. He killed thousands of them. Homosexuals, wiped them out, killed them. Just annihilated any people group he didn't like. And guess who thought that was okay? Adolf Hitler did. He thought it was perfectly moral. Made perfect sense to him. Joseph Stalin. We don't even know how many people he killed. The numbers range between 20 and 40 million people that he exterminated in Russia, because it made sense to him. I mean, look at our culture, at the things that make sense to people as being okay. Now, some of you are going, Stuart, it's terrible. It is terrible. But think about this. What happens when we apply that to Christianity? I don't need the Bible to tell me what's right and wrong. I don't need God to tell me what's right and wrong. I'm going to figure it out for myself. The things that make sense to me to be okay, I'm going to say they're okay. You know, so when I look at something and I'm like, it doesn't make sense to me that God would say that's wrong, so I'm going to say that's okay because, you know, I'm smart enough to figure out morality, right? Now, let me ask you a question. If mankind was capable of being moral without God, what would be the purpose of Jesus? What would be the purpose of the Bible? Why would he have to tell us what's right and wrong if we're capable of figuring out for ourselves? I was sitting here this morning, I'm trying to imagine. I'm going to give Caleb a break because he's sitting in the front row. And Sam is in Ohio. So I'm trying to imagine me letting Samantha at 5 years old figure out for herself right and wrong. How many of you know Sam? How many of you see that going poorly? First hand up. Sam, if you're watching this in Ohio, your brother's hand was the first hand up. Your mother's was only the second. And then some dear friends got, you know. I'm trying to imagine my parents letting me decide what was right and wrong. Hey, look, Stuart's getting ready to stick a fork in that outlet. Feels right to him. Let him try it. I mean, really, how many of you as children would have fared better if your parents had just said, you'll figure it out. Just be you. That wouldn't go very well, would it? But that is the mindset of a significant portion of quote-unquote religious people today. I don't need God's rules. I don't need the Bible to tell me right and wrong. I can figure it out. I can look at society and decide what's okay and what isn't. I don't need some ancient manuscript to tell me what's moral and what isn't. I know. I can figure it out. That Bible is so outdated, it's got rules in there that don't make any sense to me. And we see this all the time. We see whole groups within the church, whole denominations that are just abandoning Scripture because it doesn't feel right to them. It didn't feel right to me. My morality says that this is okay, and you know, so I'm just going to go with what I feel. And man, that's a big thing today, right? It's all an emotion. It's how I feel about things. People will look at me and go, this is how I feel. I actually had a student. I marked a question wrong on their history test. And the kid came up to me after class and said, "Mr. Woodley, you marked this wrong." And I said, "Yes, I did." She said, "Why?" I said, "Because it's wrong." She said, "That's not how I feel." And I started laughing because I assumed that was a joke. I just thought, okay, she's messing with me now. She goes, "That's not how I feel." And I started laughing. She goes, "Why are you laughing?" I said, "Because your feelings don't have anything to do with the right and wrong answers. The question has, nowhere in the question does the word your opinion appear. It's a question about what we learned in class." Yeah, but I didn't agree with that. What? What? You don't agree with it? I was like, "Look, I took anthropology. I didn't believe 90% of what I heard, but I could regurgitate every stupid thing they taught me. I got a B in that class and was very proud of it." But it's like, this is the mindset. And so as Christians, I think we have to be really careful about this because Paul says, look, here's the problem. He said, you've got these people who they don't know God's righteousness. So what do? I'm going to establish my own. I'm going to create my own righteousness. Now, if you all just decided this morning you were going to walk out here and go, you know what I've decided? I don't need the Bible. I don't need church. I don't need any of that stuff. I'm just going to create my own righteousness today. I'm going to decide what's righteous. I'm going to decide what's not. And I'm going to have my own religion based on how I feel about things. What would that look like? Probably a mess. So Paul says that you got to be careful about this. He says these people they didn't know about God's righteousness, so they just created their own. And by the way, that reference, if you go back, the Pharisees had added layer after layer after layer of rules to the Mosaic law to clarify it and to come up with stuff they thought made sense. They didn't have anything to do with the law. And so Paul says, look, this is what they did. They didn't know God, so they created a righteousness that made sense to them. Now, I could give you a lot of examples this morning, but I'll just give you a really simple one. Okay? I don't understand the whole baptism thing. Now, some of you would be like, what? You don't understand that? Somewhere in history, when God came up with a plan, he goes, this is how I'm going to save people. If you honestly can tell me, let's dunk them in water. If you honestly are sitting there going, I know exactly what that is. Out of the millions of ways God could have redeemed someone, he came up with, let's dunk them in water. Now, if you were just going to create your own righteousness, how many of you would come up with that same plan? So, I'm going to save somebody. How are you going to do it? Could make them walk through hot coals. That would hurt. I could make them run a marathon. Then Amy would be the only one in the room saved. And Steve. Sorry, Steve. Steve's back there. Steve's going, I can outrun Amy. Two people. I would burn. I would not make it 2 miles. I could make them run a marathon. I could make them walk on hot coals. I don't know. I could make them, I don't know. We could come up with all sorts of stuff. Now, so do I understand the imagery of baptism? Yeah, I get the imagery. But here's what it comes down to. Why do I believe in baptism? It's not because I understand it. It's because it's what the scripture tells us to do. Just go do it. On Pentecost, when they said, hey, Peter, what do we need to do? Peter said, go walk on hot coals and run a marathon. No, he said, repent and be baptized. And by the way, you know what's funny? In Acts 2, 38 through 40, whatever, you know what Peter never does? He never tells him why. He didn't explain it. He didn't go, and by the way, here's why I want you to do that. And he just said, do it. Just do it. That's what you do. And if we were creating our own righteousness, that would probably never occur to most of us to do that. And by the way, a lot of people create their own righteousness and decide, no, I'm not going to do that. It doesn't make any sense. The truth is, if we're honest, there's a lot of things in Scripture that probably don't make sense to us. So why do we do them? Because we have faith. We trust God. This is what God said to do. You know what? God said this is wrong. I don't know why it's wrong, but he says it's wrong. If he says it's wrong, and by the way, he created the whole thing. So if he says this is wrong, what should I assume? It's probably wrong. And like most good parents, when you ask them, why can't I do that? What do they say? Because I said so. I'm going to explain it to you. I'm going to camp today. I'm going to have 110 kids. I'm going to go over rules with them. And some are going to look at me and go, why? And guess what I'm going to say? Because I said so. That's the rule. That's the rule. So let's look at verse 4. So Paul now, he gets into all that. Then he says, for Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. It's fantastic. Now there's irony in here, right? Because what is Paul just talked about? He says these people don't know God's righteousness. They kind of have their own righteousness. And so then Paul comes back with this. He says, Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. So what's the irony here? Well, after all the stuff about following God and finding his righteousness, here's what Paul says. And this is, to me, fascinating. Paul says, this is not about rules, by the way. Christianity is not about rules. Now, some people don't like that. They're like, I don't like that. It's not about rules. Guess what Christianity is about? It's about relationship. It's about relationship, right? And when you're in a relationship with somebody, when you love somebody, what do you want to do? You want to do things that make them happy. Jesus said out of his own mouth in the Gospels, if you love me, keep my commandments. Yeah, just do the things I've asked you to do if you love me. How many of you have ever done something for somebody you love that you didn't really want to do? Every married couple in here just went 73 times and counting, right? We do stuff for the people we love that we don't want to do. Caleb came in a few weeks ago, and he goes, Dad, I have good news and bad news. I said, oh, okay. I said, what's the good news? He said, well, I'm helping with South Central, and football practice will not be in the hottest part of the day. I said, that's good news. So what's the bad news? You got to take me out there at 6:30 in the morning. That is bad news. That is bad news. But I got up, 6 a.m., got ready, went upstairs, woke him up. It's like, hey, you ready? You awake? He's like, I'm awake. I'm like, you're not awake, dude. You were laying there snoring when I walked in the room. He's like, I'm awake. I get in the car, drive him out there. I take him to practice. You know why I took him to practice? Because I want him out of the house. No, that's not why. I took him to practice because I love him. You do things for people you love, right? You do things for people you love. So Paul says, here's the problem. He said the Jewish people are still trying to please God through the following of the rules, through the law, and they don't understand that Christ is the end of the law. That's not what it's about anymore. I've said this for years, and I as a minister, sometimes you say things and you think, man, people get it, and then sometimes I swear you say stuff and you're like, I don't think anybody hears a thing I'm saying. You don't come to church because it's the rule. Some of you are going, really? Have you said that before? 1,000 times. You don't come to church because it's the rule. You don't come to church because if you miss church, you're going to go to hell. That's not why you come to church. Why do you come to church? Because you love God. You want to be with him and his people. You want to learn about him. You want to worship him. That's why you come. It's got nothing to do with the rule. But we want to make everything about the rule. How many times I got to pray each day? I got to pray at every meal. You pray to pray at every meal. You don't pray at every meal because it's a rule. Why do you pray at a meal? Because you're grateful. You're grateful. Doesn't have anything to do with a rule. But we try to make every element of worshiping God and following God. Well, there's a rule for that, right? Isn't there a rule? We got to follow the rule. What are the rules? Because if I don't follow the rules, I'm being in trouble. And the whole point of the crucifixion and the resurrection was to free us from the law. I don't know how to tell you this, but Jesus really doesn't want you here because you think it's the rule. He wants you to be here because you love him. Right? I mean, that's what he wants. And if you think, I don't know if I buy that, if you've ever been in any kind of relationship, either with a spouse or with a child or with a parent, you don't want them to do things for you because it's the rule. Right? I mean, how many times have you gotten a gift and you're like, it's the thought that counts, right? It's the thought that counts. How many of you have ever on Mother's Day or Father's Day said, you better give me something because it's a day? I mean, it's not the way it's supposed to work. And so Paul is trying to explain. He says, look, Christ is the end of the law for righteousness for those of us who are believers. So he says, look, the Jewish people are still attached to this law. They're still trying to please God through the following of rules. And he goes, that's not all he wants from them is a relationship. I never thought I would do this, but I'm going to quote Notting Hill in a sermon. Those of you who have ever seen Notting Hill, Amy just laughed. Amy, do you have that on DVD? You stream it, though? You watch all the time? Okay. There's a scene in Notting Hill where this actress, this real famous actress, she's in love with this nobody. And she comes and she tells him she's in love with him. And she's hurt his feelings before, so he's not real interested. I don't want to ruin the movie if you were going to go home and rent that. But there's a cool scene where she says, look, I know I'm famous, I know, but look, at the end of the day, I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her. Oh, it's so sweet. And you know, there's a lot of truth in that. All Jesus wants is for you to love him the way he loves you. That's all he wants. He's not asking for he's not asking you to do crazy stuff. He's not asking you to do anything crazy, like the stuff in the Mosaic law. He's not asking for that. He's like, look, I just want you to love me. I just want you to love me the way I love you. And so when I invite you over to my place, what would I like you to do? I'd like you to show up. When I invite you over, come over. Yeah, just come over, hang out. Sing some songs with me, you know. I got some great teachings. Listen to them. And by the way, fellowship with my friends. Hang out with them. Get to know them. That's all I really want from you. I want you to know me. And then I want you to tell other people how cool I am to hang out with. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? I mean, take a minute and think about this. If you were walking down the street tomorrow, I'm going to close with this. The praise team, you want to start coming up here, get ready for our communion song. If you were walking down the street tomorrow, and I'll do this for the Tar Heel fans because some of us don't care, but if you were walking down the street tomorrow and Michael Jordan walked up and said, hey, how are you doing, man? I would love to hang out with you. Some of you would pass out. You would go unconscious. And then you'd be on every social media. Guess who wants to hang out with me? Michael Jordan wants to hang out with me. There's a whole string of people in this row right here who are thinking, if Chris Hemsworth walked up tomorrow and said, hey, Amelia, you want to hang out? Chris would have to do CPR on Amelia. And then Amelia would have to roll over and do CPR on Carissa. They'd have to save each other's life. And Hazel would just watch them both die so she could have Chris Hemsworth. And Hazel's boyfriend's going, really? I'm sorry, Cooper. I'm sorry. But you know it's true, brother. You know it's true. You know, we would, some of us have these people that we idolize that we would go unconscious, man, if they tomorrow just said, hey, I want to hang out with you. Well, try this one on. The creator of the universe wants to hang out with you. The Son of God, who died for your sins, just wants to hang out with you. He wants to spend time with you. He wants to get to know you and have you get to know him. You'd die tomorrow if Michael Jordan asked for that. You'd die if Chris Hemsworth asked for that. And just for the men, Scarlett Johansson. Some of you are going, who? Black Widow. It's a Black Widow. Not a real Black Widow, but a character. Just never mind. But you would just, you know, if somebody famous, somebody you idolized, came up tomorrow and wanted to hang out with you, you would lose it. And yet we can be incredibly indifferent to the fact that the creator of the universe wants to hang out with you. He wants you to come over to his place. He wants you to spend time with him. And you know what's crazy? He wants to save you. That's pretty cool, right? That's pretty cool. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes.